Welcome to Today on Broadway for Thursday, September 1st, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
Why would you say something so mean like September 1st?
I almost tripped over it. I had to stop myself and say, well, what? What? Summer just started. The year just started. This podcast just started. And we're already like, I don't know, 4 years in, it seems like.
Yeah, you know, Broadway years are like, you know, seven Broadway years to an actual year.
Yeah, I feel that. Basically, everybody on Broadway is a dog, is what you're saying.
Oh, I did not say that. I am James Marino from Broadway Stars. That was Matt Tamanini. You can send email to matt@broadwayradio.com.
Hey, you made the dog year reference, so, oh well.
I said Broadway years.
Whatever.
Okay. Let's get on to the news. Three Broadway shows made major casting announcements yesterday.
Yeah, seemingly in preparation for the long Labor Day holiday, Broadway press reps just dumped, and I mean dumped in the most affectionately exciting way, a whole bunch of casting news at the end of this mythical summer season, which seems to only have just started. But the biggest news seems to be the announcement of the Broadway company of A Bronx Tale, the musical. Reprising their principal roles from this past winter's Paper Mill production are Tony nominee Nick Cordero, who is currently in Waitress on Broadway, Richard H. Blake and Lucia Gianetta as Sonny, Lorenzo, and Rosina, respectively. Joining the cast will be Hamilton's Bullet, Ariana DeBose, Bobby Conte Thornton, and Bradley Gibson in principal roles. Also returning to the cast are a dozen ensemble members from the Paper Mill production earlier this year. With music and lyrics by Alan Menken and Glenn Slater and a book by original star and playwright Chaz Palminteri, the production begins performances on November 3rd at the Long Acre Theater and is directed by four-time Tony winner Jerry Zaks and two-time Oscar winner Robert De Niro. Now, James, that's exciting and all, but we did have other news because producers also announced the complete casting of both upcoming shows, Natasha Pierre and the Great Comedy of 1812 and La Liaison d'Ange Rouge. We've talked about the principal casting for both of these shows, but one of the cool notes to come out of this stuff today, James, is that the Great Comet will mark the Broadway debut for 24 performers. La Liaison d'Ange Rouge begins performances at the booth on October 8th, and then 10 days later on the 18th, Great Comet starts up at the Imperial. You know, James, as big of a fan as I am, and as much as we talk about the big theater stories every day, I love the big names like Liev Schreiber and Josh Groban headlining these shows. But the news that really makes my cynical heart smile a little bit is all of the performers making their Broadway debuts. It's, I don't know, it's just such a cool moment for them. And as somebody who hasn't been in a play since he was 17 years old, I can't even imagine how special that must be to get the call from your agent and then to step on the stage for the first time. That's just got to be so cool.
That's, I think that's why shows like 42nd Street and even Chorus Line are so widely embraced, because that excitement of getting your first Broadway show is, I don't think there's anything that can really replace it.
God, I hope I get it.
Excellent reference. Party on, Garth. All right. So next up, Roundabout's Holiday Inn begins previews tonight at Studio 54.
Yeah, speaking of shows opening on Broadway, today marks the first preview performance of the Roundabout Theater Company's production of Holiday Inn, the new Irving Berlin musical. I don't know how I feel about the word new in there, but, you know, whatever. Yeah. With music and lyrics by the aforementioned legend Irving Berlin, Gordon Greenberg and Chad Hodges have adapted the script of the Oscar-winning film, and leading the cast are Tony nominee Bryce Pinkham, Corbin Blue, Laura Lee Gayer, Megan Sikora, and Tony nominees Megan Lawrence and Lee Wilcoff. Greenberg directs and Dennis Jones choreographs. Holiday Inn is, fittingly, scheduled to run through New Year's Day of 2017. James, where do you stand on the Berlin musicals? I've always been more of a White Christmas guy myself.
What do you mean? Which one is my favorite?
Well, I mean, I think you, me, and Peter Flish have talked about how it's really easy to confuse White Christmas and Holiday Inn. Because not only do they share a song or two, they're both set in, like, hotels, and there's about holidays. And to be honest with you, when Holiday Inn was first announced, I just kept thinking it was another White Christmas show. But, I grew up watching White Christmas a lot more than Holiday Inn. Maybe it's just me.
No, I agree with you myself. I think it's, you know, we should have a discussion tangentially about this. It's like the first time you hear a cast recording, it's your favorite cast recording, no matter which one you hear first. And I think that we saw White Christmas play on an endless loop through the holiday season as we were growing up, so we were more inclined to that. But I'm excited for Holiday Inn.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's got a great cast. And I think this is, again, completely tangential and off script. I don't know why White Christmas, I always loved the song "I'll Follow the Old Man Wherever He Wants to Go." Like, I don't know why. It's not a major song. It's not one of the big show-stopping songs. But that song, just maybe it's the military cadence or the sentiment behind it. But I just always loved that song for some reason.
Hopefully we'll be able to see that soon.
Yeah, I think it's on tour every holiday, so maybe it'll be down here in Orlando this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, what's up in the show and casting news?
Well, we've got news of 3 out-of-town productions, 2 in Connecticut and 1 in Jersey. First, the newest work from Tony-nominated playwright Sarah Rule will begin performances on September 30th at the Yale Repertory Theater. Scenes from Court Life or The Whipping Boy and His Prince will be directed by Mark Wing Davey, and as someone who spent 2 years as a history major with a focus on Tudor England, this has one of the most fascinating descriptions I've heard in a long time. Press notes say, quote, "History remixed. In 17th century Great Britain, the Stuarts, Charles I and Charles II, defend their divine rights with the help of a whipping boy. In our own time, Jeb and George W. Bush play hardball, both in politics and tennis, battling for power as siblings and statesmen. By turns intimate and epic, Sarah Rule's astonishing new play reveals the cost of dynastic privilege." I think this is just shaping up to be a hilarious show. And we talk about politics a little bit on here, so you know that I'm at least a politics nut. So I love all of these different things, and Sarah Rule is amazing. This play is scheduled to run through October 22nd at the Yale University Theater in New Haven. Then, just about 45 minutes north on the 91, Academy Award winner Richard Dreyfuss will star in Mark St. Germain's latest historical play, Relativity, from October 7th through November 13th as part of the Theater Works' 31st season. Directed by Rob Ruggiero, Dreyfuss will play Albert Einstein in a play that, quote, "challenges our preconceived notions of who Einstein was and delivers a far more nuanced and humane understanding of the man behind the genius." Dreyfuss is an admitted Einstein enthusiast, and he seems like a perfect fit for a play by Saint Germain, who has also written historically centric, I don't know, I don't want to speak to their authenticity, but historically centered plays, becoming Dr. Ruth and Freud's Last Session, amongst many other works. James, I had the chance to interview Mark St. Germain and his co-writer Emmy winner John Marcus, 3-4 years ago, as they were working on the world premiere of their play The Fabulous Lipitones in Atlanta. And I did you see that up at Paper Mill?
I did, yes.
Yeah, and he was just such a warm and kind guy. To see what a prolific playwright he was, and to see he's just so thoughtful and warm and a great listener, I was really impressed by him.
Wow. I'm so happy when we meet really wonderful people involved in this business. Yeah. So mentioning Paper Mill, the full cast was announced for Paper Mill's The Producers.
Yeah, so if you go from New Haven to Hartford, then turn back around and go down the 95 to Millburn, New Jersey. That's where Paper Mill Playhouse will be reviving the Mel Brooks musical The Producers, which, coincidentally, Richard Dreyfuss once starred in the West End. Paper Mill will be running the production from September 28th through October 23rd. Leading the production will be David Joseph Berg, most recently of An Act of God and Honeymoon in Vegas on Broadway as Leo Bloom, Michael Kristoff as Max Bialystock, Grease, Rock of Ages, and Priscilla's own Buckeye Born and Bred Ashley Spencer as Ula, Kevin Pariseau as Roger Debris, John Tracy Egan as Franz Liebken, and more. Now, James, I know this might be sacrilegious to say in the week that the great Gene Wilder passed away, but I have seen both movie versions of The Producers, but I've never seen a stage production of it. I feel like that, you know, makes me less of a theater fan than I should be.
You know, how did you miss that? Was national tours not coming through Ohio?
Well, I wasn't in Ohio for most of that run. I actually was in New York on a college trip during the time when the previews were going on, and we had an opportunity to get student rush tickets or whatever the discount was, And the people that I was there with, all theater fans, they wanted to go see something else. And I don't remember what it was at this point. And when it turned out to be the biggest thing ever, they all regretted it. Heather Thomas, Tracy Mulhausen, Julie Schultz, they all regretted it. And they admitted that to me to this day. But then I didn't get to see it in New York again. And I, for whatever reason, the tours didn't come. So I am still a onstage producer's virgin, so to speak.
That's the equivalent of saying no, we want to go see American in Paris, not Hamilton.
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure we actually saw a show. So for all I know, we might have spent the afternoon at like the Toys R Us in Times Square. I don't remember.
I wonder if it was there yet. All right. Next up, good friend of ours, Kara Joy David, discusses Tony Swag on Huffington Post.
Yeah, this was a really fun article. Kara Joy David, who's a New York-based entertainment journalist and someone, James, that you've known for quite a while, it sounds like, she wrote an article yesterday that talked about the way that the swag rules have changed over the Tony Awards throughout the years. It used to be that she mentioned some of her favorites were a hairspray lunchbox filled with goodies and a wonderful town viewfinder, which I think is that seems so perfect. Then there came a swag ban for a few years, and then it was lifted. And the rule is technically still not being enforced. And she thinks that early word is that because a lot of these categories are a lot closer than they were last year when Hamilton was just assumed to dominate everything, that producers are going to be trying to find ways to up their swag game for the 2017 Tonys. Now, James, I live, you know, 1,000 miles away, so I am not usually involved in these swag giveaways, but you get your fair share of swag. Do you have a favorite swag thing that you've ever gotten?
Oh, well, the most classic one was the Avenue Q swag.
What was that?
They had like a their Tony Award stuff was presidential campaign material. So they had old classic presidential campaign buttons and things like that. And one of the things we talked about it on air was this year I got I got School of Rock on vinyl.
We
talked about it on air. I don't really remember if we did or not. So that School of Rock on vinyl was really classic, very nice. And if you read the letter of the law, it followed the law. It's a commercially available product
available to everybody else.
It's available to everybody else and doesn't include anything additional in there. And it's just, I'm interested about the swag ban. I think is more to protect the producers than anybody else because, you know, they just really want to watch the bottom line. And who wants to go up against a multi-million-dollar producing organization that can you know, spend a ton of money on it? And I don't know. I think that it's a lot of inside baseball, but I enjoy getting the stuff.
Yeah, and sometimes you give it away. We gave away a mug last week.
Yeah, the Hamilton one last time. Well, I guess it was one last time. Lin-Manuel Miranda's last show commemoration mug. All right, so what's up in the podcast recommendations?
Well, the first thing that we want to recommend is that John Mulaney and Nick Kroll of Oh Hello on Broadway visited NPR's entertainment podcast Bullseye with Jesse Thorne to talk about the show and their comedy and all of these different things about their alter egos, Gil Faison and George St. Geegland. This is a show, James, that I am super excited to see what not only what you think, but especially what someone like Peter Felicia thinks, because this is not a show that is typically a Broadway show. It is apparently going to be part improvised. But these two people got huge, great reviews off Broadway when they did this show. And they've been doing these characters in different comedy clubs and different small theaters and on TV for over a decade. And I'm really excited. They're hilarious comics and sketch comedians on their own. So I'm really excited to see what they do on a legit Broadway stage. And this is a great podcast with Jesse Thorne. I subscribe to it and listen to it all the time. So I was glad to see two Broadway folks on it.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And I, when, when, you know, a lot of people outside of the Broadway community were so insular, gets an insight into the everyday goings-on of Broadway folks, I think that's nothing but beneficial for everybody involved. It's really so cool to see mainstream podcasts pick up this type of thing and run with it. It's good for everybody involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're great. And another podcast is one that I haven't listened to for very legit reasons, but it's someone that you listened to and you forwarded over to me. And that is this week's new edition of The West Wing Weekly, which is a podcast that chronicles on a weekly basis every episode of what I consider my favorite television show of all time, or at least in my top two or three. I don't remember where I ranked it, to be honest with you, on a Listapalooza episode of Some Like It Pop, but my top two or three TV shows of all time, The West Wing. And this week they talked with somebody who had not only a connection to the show and was on the show for a number of episodes, but also has a huge theater connection as well.
Yeah, so I'm a huge fan of The West Wing and watched it many, many times when it was on, and then I bought the DVDs, and now it's streaming. And now this podcast, they do a weekly podcast, Joshua Malina and Rishi.
Don't ask.
Rishi, I can't get his last name.
I can't either, but he also hosts the Song Exploder
Song
podcast,
Exploder,
which
yeah.
is great. Yeah, it's a great show.
So they do a weekly, you watch the show and then they talk about it. And this week they had on an actor, Bill O'Brien, who was Marley Matlin's sign interpreter on the show for The West Wing. And Bill O'Brien, as well as being on The West Wing as an actor, was the executive director of Deaf West.
That's awesome.
And they talked a little bit about his involvement in Deaf West and things like that. He, as a producing director, a managing director, and he received Tony Award and Drama Desk nominations for the work that he did on Big River. And
oh, that's great.
And I was like, oh, I had no idea. I never put these things together. So if you are a fan of Deaf West or a fan of The West Wing, you know, take a listen to this. In fact, they have been Joshua Malina talks a lot about theater throughout the West Wing Weekly podcast. In because he started off in theater, his first professional job as an actor was A Few Good Men, with Aaron Sorkin, and they make constant references to theater throughout their podcast. And Rishi is not so much a fan of the musical, and Josh pokes him about that all the time. And Josh is really very knowledgeable about musicals, it seems, through the podcast. I don't know Josh.
I love Joshua Malina. He is on, I found my list from Some Like a Pop. West Wing was number one. Friday Night Lights was number two. Sports Night, another show that starred Joshua Malina, was number three. Gilmore Girls, number four. Saved by the Bell, number five. Joshua Malina is also on Scandal, which is another show I love. He is fantastic. He's hilarious. And like you said, he is one of those guys who has been with Aaron Sorkin forever, dating back to the Broadway days of A Few Good Men. Then he did Sports Night. He was in A Few Good Men, the movie. He was in The West Wing. He's pretty much, basically, they joke about it a lot, he's Aaron Sorkin's friend, so Aaron's given him a lot of jobs throughout the year, so he kind of owes him his career. But he's really funny, and he's a great Twitter follow as well. So check out Joshua Malina on Twitter. He is sarcastic, to say the least.
He is. All right, so that wraps it up for today. Why don't you get us out of here?
All right, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt, and subscribe to that thing I mentioned a minute ago, Some Like It Pop, on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thank you so much for spending part of your Thursday with us, and come on back tomorrow. We will launch your Friday.
Oh, Friday. Thank God.